It's ESPN.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Football Today. I am your producer, Jay Soderberg. I am joined here with Matt Williamson. Matt, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing all right. You may have noticed there in the intro that Jeremy's name is not there anymore. For the last few weeks, we've told you that Jeremy's been on the DL dealing with some personal issues, and it's been decided to remove Jeremy indefinitely so that he can properly work out those personal issues. In the meantime, while we evolve the show, Matt Williamson here will serve as our interim host through the draft and the off season. We wish nothing but the best for Jeremy. We miss him. We can't wait for the day of his triumphant return, which I'm told is not out of the realm of possibility. And Matt pointed out to me that he's got an article up on ESPN.com today, which is fantastic.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with everything you said any more than that. And I've learned an awful lot from Jeremy. He was my my boss at the Browns. My office was right next door to him. He got me the gig here at ESPN, and he's a very good friend and somebody I've very much root for in every walk of life. He's a great person.
I agree wholeheartedly with all of that. So we move on, and today we've got a big show here, another three-point stance. We're going to hit some of the news of the day here shortly, but we also have a great interview. You know, there was some great reaction last week to the conversation with the quarterback coach Tom Martinez, and we have a similar conversation coming up with the NFL matchup creator Greg Cosell. That was set up by Matt, and it just actually happened. I'm peeling back the curtain here, Matt. We recorded things out of order today.
Yeah, I was sitting here being quiet, wondering how you're going to pull that off. But, yeah, Greg's awesome, and I've been a big fan of his, and people don't know who he is all that well, but he is kind of he's kind of like Oz behind the curtain for Jaws and Merrill Hodge and all the ESPN film dorks, you know, like myself, that he spends a lot of time in a dark room watching tape, and trust me, when you guys listen to the interview, it'll reflect.
And we also have another great interview with Saints fullback Heath Evans. Now, many of you may go, oh, the former Patriot. Of course the Patriot Homer would get Heath Evans on. But no, he actually has been working out, recovering from a torn ACL with Sam Bradford, and he's got some interesting insights on the young quarterback.
Very much so.
So we got all that coming up for you. Let's talk about some of the news from the past week.
This is the three-point stance.
The biggest news of the week, obviously, is the Broncos trading Brandon Marshall to Miami. The Broncos will receive a second-round pick in next week's draft and a second-rounder in 2011. After the blockbuster trade occurred, the Dolphins reached agreement with Brandon Marshall on a four-year, $47.5 million contract extension that includes $24 million in guaranteed money, according to a league source. It's enough to make him the highest-paid receiver in NFL history. You're going to be talking with Greg Cosell about the impact for the Dolphins. The Broncos head coach Josh McDaniels is convinced they got the best possible result in trading Brandon Marshall for the upcoming season. I don't know if I agree with that.
Well, I think I do agree with that, because if you look at the receiver deals this year, Bolden, Santonio Holmes, Brandon Marshall, those are all really good football players, and I don't think any of their former teams got enough. I mean, I think you're always going to lose in that deal. The Holmes deal was not even close, but everyone knew he had to leave, and everyone's going to be sort of afraid to sign him to be the highest paid receiver ever. So you're never going to get fair market value. And I don't think it's a good move football-wise for Denver at all, and I think it's a great move for Miami. But he had to go, apparently, and at least they got something back. But it's funny, I was just talking to Bill Williamson yesterday about this, and what do you do? You know, that offense is predicated on having a Randy Moss or a Brandon Marshall, as you know from the New England days, and they don't have anybody close.
No, and there's not anyone really like that in the draft either. Dez Bryant would be your best wide receiver. He's not a Randy Moss type.
Well, I don't know that I disagree with that. I'm not sure that I agree with that. He's not a bomb threat like Moss, but he is a true number one receiver. Brandon Marshall's not the fastest guy around either, but he's a big, physical, true number one, go-to guy. And I think Dez Bryant's the same. What you don't know about Bryant, though, is he's very young, and many people say he's extremely immature. That's not to say he's a bad person or he's going to get in trouble on or off the field, but are you? It seems like a lot of potential to exchange one set of problems for another.
Yeah.
You know, and oh, by the way, it's going to cost you your first round pick.
Be careful what you wish for.
Exactly. Yeah.
Quick slants.
Before we get to Santonio Holmes, Ben Roethlisberger had a big meeting here with the NFL commissioner, Roger Goodell. NFL spokesperson Greg Aiello issued the following statement saying, quote, Commissioner Goodell met today with Ben Roethlisberger and his representatives to discuss the recent incident involving his personal conduct. In accordance with the league's personal conduct policy, our office will review all the facts and follow up at the appropriate time with the Steelers and Ben. It should be noted that Ben will not be charged with any sort of criminal charges in his latest incident, but clearly the commissioner's office is looking into suspension on the personal conduct policy side.
Yeah, as you could guess, the last couple weeks here in Pittsburgh have been full of news and notes, and I'm feeling like I'm on the air here locally all the time talking about Ben and Santonio. There's not much to add, though. Everyone wants, you know, Matt, what's your take on the Ben situation? Well, I think he'll probably get a game or two. I don't know what him and Commissioner Goodell talked about, but I would imagine it went something along the lines of, hey, Ben, you know, you're one of the few faces of this league, and you're with a very prominent team. You've won Super Bowls. You know, get your head out of your rectum and be a smart human being and keep yourself in, you know, stay out of bad situations. I don't know if you did anything wrong that day or not. You didn't get convicted of anything, but be smart and don't be in situations where you can get in trouble.
Quick slants.
And the Jets have acquired Santonio Holmes from the Steelers for a fifth-round pick. Santonio Holmes was also suspended by the NFL for the first four regular season games for violating the league's substance abuse policy. The league announced the suspension Monday, a day after the Jets acquired the troubled Holmes from the Pittsburgh Steelers for a fifth-round pick in this month's draft. Holmes is eligible to participate in the team's off-season program and in all preseason practices and games, but he'll be out for the first 4 weeks of the regular season. It also came to light that the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reported the Steelers were ready to cut Holmes if they hadn't been able to find a trade partner. They took the best deal they could find late Sunday night.
This one, obviously ownership, you know, told the front office in Pittsburgh here that, hey, he's got to go. You know, so fine. Yeah, you know, I don't blame the front office for the deal they made so much. But in my opinion, couldn't you wait until this upcoming weekend, you know, 8 days from now or whatever on draft day and use him as a bargaining chip in some way? Did you have to make the deal that day? Getting a fifth-round pick for Santonio Holmes, even with the suspension, even though he's going to be a free agent at the end of the year, is more or less giving him away. You know, you're getting a late fifth-round pick for a very, very good player, a borderline Pro Bowl player, and that's not enough. My thoughts are, couldn't you have used him to move up in the second round to go get a corner or whatever? It just seemed like settling for that wasn't good enough, especially with the draft right around the corner. Couldn't you make a deal on draft day for him and have that fifth rounder in your back pocket, use it if you had to, and make that deal? For the Jets, it's great, you know, because they got nothing invested in him. In all honesty, like I said, he's a free agent after the year. Even if they rent him for 12 games because of suspension and the playoffs, they can let him go at the end of
playoffs.
The year. Nice. They can let him go at the end of the year and probably receive a higher compensatory pick because he's going to get signed to so much as a free agent than they gave up for the Steelers. So why not? Unless the Pittsburgh thought it was such addition by subtraction to get him out of the locker room, which they apparently did. You know, I just can't see Holmes getting to the Jets and infecting them. And instead, the Steelers gave him to somewhat of a rival. You're giving it to one of the best teams in your conference. And one team took a step back on the field, and I think one team took a big step forward.
I was going to say, because despite the fact that they have...
I always keep my head on the swivel.
One of our favorite wide receivers on their team, in Hines Ward, that they've got a big hole now at the wide receiver position that not necessarily can be filled through the draft.
Right. You know what? It's interesting, because I saw their list of visits several weeks ago or whenever that came out, and they had guys like Golden Tate and Dez Bryant on that list, and I kind of thought, why bother with those guys? You know, you're not going to go receiver with your top two rounds. Well, apparently they knew all along that Santonio wasn't going to be around. So, you know, I could see Dez Bryant being an option there, or they maybe they go for a Tate or a Ben or somebody along those lines. But I'm expecting them to take a receiver high. It's not like these guys are great players, but they brought in two free agents in Randall L. and Battle who can play. You know, they're not too bad. And I think Wallace is a developing player. I think he's ready to start. But, you know, they're very weak there now, though. You're right. They do need to add one more guy who's substantial. I mean, a top two-round type of player.
Quick slants.
This is sort of a, I don't know what to make of this story, but Jerry Jones slams Bill Parcells and Tim Tebow in an amateur video that was posted on Deadspin.com, basically saying that he hired Parcells to get the stadium that he now has and wouldn't draft Tim Tebow because he'd never see the field. He appears to be in an inebriated state. But my point about this story is this really even a story? Like, are we making a big deal about, you know, a guy who is out at a bar who just happens to be the owner of the Dallas Cowboys?
Yeah. I didn't see the clip. I don't really care to see the clip. But yeah, I think it's just one more glaring example of the world we live in now is everybody sees everything. I mean, skeletons come out left and right. And, you know, the world of Twitter and Facebook and phones with cameras on them, I think everybody's going to get caught doing something wrong. Nobody's perfect.
Yeah, eventually.
Quick slants.
The Ravens end the contract of defensive back Samari Roll. General manager Ozzie Newsome said Tuesday he had a conversation with Roll about a week ago and told him the team intended to terminate his contract, and the move was formally carried out on Tuesday.
Yeah, that's fine. I think his career's over. He's lost a step. They're weak at that position, and it wouldn't shock me if they went corner in the first round, too.
Quick slants.
There were a lot of players that have signed their tenders, and if you want to see all of them, I suggest you go to ESPN.com and look them up. But I bring this one up only because it was part of the Pod Vader plan, and it appears the Pod Vader plan, now that Marshall has been traded, is dead. But Leon Washington has apparently agreed to sign his Jets tender, according to the Associated Press.
Yeah, you know what? I was hoping, and there was people around here thinking that he'd be part of the Santonio Holmes deal, and that would have made sense to me. Yeah. Hey, I'll give you Santonio for Leon's a little bit better, two unhappy guys, as opposed to Santonio for a fifth. But it is what it is. Right now, I'm really excited to talk to Greg Cosell. He is the creator and executive producer of NFL Matchup. NFL Matchup's been on the air for 26 years. And, Greg, I got to come clean. It's number one on my TiVo list. With all my kids' shows we have and my wife's shows, we have 49 shows taped on our TiVo, and that's number one on my list. And every Sunday morning, that's how I start my day on game day.
You mean it's ahead of SpongeBob SquarePants?
It's on there.
Okay.
That's my favorite show on TV is NFL Madden.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
Great stuff. But let's talk quarterbacks. I mean, we could talk about any team, anybody in the league. As much film study as you do, we could really have hours and hours of conversation. But with the draft right around the corner, I wanted to touch on a couple NFL quarterbacks and a couple of draft prospects, just your opinions on things.
Okay.
First off, all the talk right now is Brandon Marshall to the Dolphins. And
right.
I'm very much in favor of the move from a Dolphins perspective, but I want your opinion on Chad Henne and how does this help him, affect him, all the above.
Well, I really like Chad Henne, and I loved what I saw this year, because when I look at quarterbacks, I always look at attributes and traits that I believe lead to NFL success, and I think that Henne has many of those attributes. He's very tough in the pocket, a very strong pocket mentality. He will stand there and throw the ball. He'll throw the ball before receivers come out of breaks. That's timing and anticipation. Have to be able to do that in the NFL. He'll try to make stick throws into tight windows in critical situations. Have to do that. So I think it makes perfect sense for the Dolphins to go after a big-time receiver, because there's nothing worse than having a quarterback, particularly a pocket quarterback, and not have receivers for him to deliver the ball to. So as far as the Dolphins are concerned, I think from a pure football standpoint, it's a great move.
Yeah, you know what? I couldn't agree with you more. I was fortunate enough to watch 2 years of Chad in high school, every year of him in Michigan, and of course now since he's been in the NFL, and he has it. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more with your analysis of his abilities, and I think he's ready to really bust out of his shell with a true number one receiver to throw to right
you
now.
You know, and what's really interesting about the Dolphins is last year, you notice they sort of went away from the Wildcat as the season progressed because Henny is an NFL quarterback. You know, they were playing the Wildcat simply to camouflage and compensate for the fact that they really did not have a very good offense, and they certainly did not have a very good pass game.
Yeah, that's dead on. And you know what? I did a piece just yesterday talking about what does this do for the Dolphins. And what it does for them, in my opinion now, too, is they can still come out in their real heavy run looks. They can come out in 22 personnel or with an extra offensive lineman with one receiver on the field and still be very, very threatening in the passing game, with that being Brandon Marshall.
That's exactly right, because what that'll guarantee, and we see that all the time on film with teams, is you come out with 22 personnel and one wideout, and you're almost dictating one-on-one coverage on the perimeter, particularly with certain routes. And you can certainly do that with Brandon Marshall. And you know, it's a great situation for the Dolphins. And I'll tell you what, it wouldn't surprise me if they even drafted another receiver in this draft, you know, because I think they'll, you know, Camarillo's a nice player, Bess is a nice player in certain roles, but I think Bill Parcells is smart enough to know that this is a passing league and you've got a young gun quarterback and you're going to need weapons on the perimeter.
Let's move on. We could talk about this situation all day, but I got a long list of quarterbacks I want to touch on with you. And the next one is the other trade, the huge trade. The Eagles, the Redskins, there's really three quarterbacks involved there with Kevin Cobb, Donovan McNabb, and Jason Campbell, who I think I like more than most people do. But what's your impression of the trade, the three of them, all the above?
Well, look, we know that this trade was essentially in the works, not the specific trade, but when they drafted the Eagles, that is Kevin Cobb 3 years ago. Because you don't make your first pick in the draft, the 36th player chosen, without some sense that that guy's going to be your quarterback. And the game that I believe was the true game this year where the Eagles just said, you know what, it's time, was the Week 17 game against the Dallas Cowboys, the game that they lost 24-0, because watching the tape of that game, and this is why watching tape is so critical, and you guys can appreciate this, Andy Reid did an unbelievable job of scheming his pass offense. There were receivers open all game long, and Donovan McNabb had one of his inaccurate games where he just couldn't hit open receivers. And when you spend so much time scheming and designing and it works and your quarterback can't make the throws, you're tearing your hair out. And I think that was the game where they finally said, you know what, we're going to pull the trigger after this season.
Yeah, my impression of it are similar as well. I mean, I think he's always been a liability in the red zone. He's always had those games, like you talked about with that Dallas game, is he's had, you know, 2, 3, 4 of them a year, and if one happens in the playoffs, you don't advance. And my impression of the situation was, why would they trade him inside the NFC East? Well, to me, they would rather play against them than with them.
Well, you know, I don't have a problem with that because they obviously know his flaws and his weaknesses. See, I think the biggest issue with Donovan, and he's certainly been a very good quarterback in this league, I'm not looking to rip Donovan McNabb, but I think he has clear flaws and limitations to his game. But I think the number one issue for the Eagles, as it is for any offensive coach, whether you would talk to a Mike Holmgren or Mike Shanahan, is they want to know what they're going to get from their quarterback on a play-to-play, week-to-week basis. You don't know that with Donovan McNabb. And I think that eventually drives coaches crazy. See, I think now that Kevin Cobb is there, he's not going to be the deep ball thrower. The vertical passing game won't be as good because Cobb's not that kind of quarterback. But he's more decisive. He has a quicker release. The ball will come out faster. They will go back more to the roots of the West Coast offense with a lot of the short to intermediate passes. Because the West Coast offense at its core is about one thing. Completions. You know, the whole premise is a 4-yard completion is a perfectly fine play. And I think the Eagles will sort of dial down the route combinations and they will be a more sustaining offense, which, by the way, will work better with a defense in transition, because when you can sustain offense, you can actually shorten the game. When you have a lot of incompletions, you lengthen the game and your defense has to play longer.
That's very well said, and I think most fans think that Andy Reid is running a pure West Coast offense there, But with Matt McNabb, he really isn't.
He got away from it. Yeah, he got away from it because that's not McNabb's strength. You know, all those short crossing routes that require great accuracy. We remember Montana hitting John Taylor and Jerry Rice. Steve Young, you know, hitting Jerry Rice. You know, those kinds of throws are not McNabb's strength. He's not a precision passer in the short to intermediate pass game. That's more of Kevin Cobb's game.
It's hard to comment on a quarterback, and you and I are always asked to do this, and analysts everywhere, without a ton of tape. And we don't know a lot about Kevin Cobb. We haven't seen the bullets flying around him for a full season. But what's your impressions? Do you have high hopes for him? You have kind of touched on it that he fits the system better. Do you think he'll be successful?
Well, I watched those two games that he started last year a couple of weeks ago back-to-back. So I watched all his throws. And, you know, I think that he's got some arm strength limitations, so that you won't see certain throws, but I think he was much more decisive in getting rid of the football. You know, he had elements to me of a couple of different quarterbacks, just so people can get a picture of this. I think he had elements of Matt Hasselbeck in the way he played. I think he looked like, although he doesn't have this guy's arm, I think the way he carried the ball and the way he stood in the pocket, I think he looked like Carson Palmer. But again, he doesn't have that kind of arm strength. And I think there's elements of a Drew Brees in his game as well. And again, I'm not saying he's Drew Brees, but I think that personally, I don't think there'll be any drop-off in production in the Eagle pass game this year at all.
And the last guy affected by it is Jason Campbell. And personally, I feel like this guy has gotten a raw deal. I'm not saying he's a world beater, but there's a lot of ability there. That offensive line around him last year was atrocious. They had no running game. He goes through coordinators at a record pace.
Right.
I don't know how you can even analyze this guy. And if I was Washington, I would have stuck with him, built around him for a year, and at least given him a shot with Shanahan. And if I was the Bills or the Raiders, I'd be on the phone to get Jason Campbell. What are your thoughts on him?
It's interesting because I think Campbell is a certain kind of quarterback, and what he is not is a West Coast quarterback. He's not a quick-twitch quarterback. He's not a guy who's going to get rid of the ball quickly on a three-step drop, a five-step drop. That's not his game. He's not a nimble ballet-like mover. He is a quarterback who I think must work off the run game with deeper drops, play action, limit the reading progression. And by the way, there's a lot of quarterbacks who've been very successful playing that way. But I think that's his game, and it did not fit with what obviously Jim Zorn wanted to do. It was, you know, the old round peg in the square hole. It doesn't work. And I think we saw elements of Campbell that were really positive, but for the most part, he wasn't quick enough to play in that offense.
Yeah, that's well said, too. And I see him more as a Drew Bledsoe, play action, throw the ball deep, you know, can generate good RPMs on the ball, can cut the wind in Buffalo, you know, and the poor guy just needs someone to sit down with him for two or three years and keep the system the same to at least give him a chance of success.
I agree. I think Bledsoe's probably not as pure a thrower as Bledsoe in his prime, but he's certainly that kind of quarterback.
Yeah. And the last NFL guy I need to mention is Mark Sanchez. You look at the Jets, they're loaded. You know, they've made a ton of moves. They pick up Santonio Holmes for a song. Who knows how it works out off the field, but they're certainly better on the field. In my opinion, the Jets are, I love them, but I still have questions about the quarterback position to be an elite team. What are your thoughts on Sanchez?
It's interesting you mention that because the Jets, you know, as successful as they were last year getting to the AFC Championship game, Rex Ryan understands that you can't play the exact same way again because they tried to play last year by hiding Mark Sanchez, and they were fortunate to get as far as they did. You can't consistently play that way in the NFL. Sanchez last year, because he had so many problems, they were looking to win the games without him being a factor in the games. And it worked. And for the most part, it worked. But now they understand that they've got to let Sanchez try to take the next step. When Sanchez came out, and even watching him last year, I did not view him as a top 10 pick in a draft. I think he's got some limitations throwing the ball, which is not to say that he can't be a very good quarterback. But I think he ultimately needs to be, and I hate using this term, but we all know what it means, a system quarterback, a complementary quarterback, a quarterback that works within the framework of a multidimensional offense that runs the ball very effectively. And then I think you can do the kinds of things you want to do, the play action, throw the ball out of run personnel and run formations, and then I think a Mark Sanchez can be very, very effective.
Last question on him, and this is a big worry that I've said over and over in my chats and what have you, is does he fit that area of the country? Can he cut the wind? you know, come playoff time when the Jets have home field advantage in the AFC playoffs, or they have to go to New England for a key game when the weather's bad and the wind's heavy, can he deliver the football well enough and with enough velocity to cut the wind?
That's a great question, because I thought that he has some limitations, and I think the short to intermediate game between the numbers, he can throw the ball very, very well. I think that's his strength. I don't think he throws the ball to the perimeter real well. I don't think he's a far hash deep comeback thrower. I don't think you're going to see a lot of that from Mark Sanchez. I don't think he can make that throw real well. So I think he has some limitations, but again, they know that. So I think their offense will be structured and their pass game will be structured a certain way. But I think short to intermediate between the numbers, he throws a very, very good ball.
And let's move to the draft here a little bit. And like I said, we could talk for hours and hours about quarterbacks, but I do want to touch on some of these guys considering the time of year. Who are your top two? Is it Bradford and Clawson, or do you have a different opinion?
No, I share that opinion, but I think there's a significant drop-off. I think Bradford, from what I've seen on film, is clearly the number one quarterback in this draft. But having said that, I don't think, as you look back historically, that he's at the level of a Troy Aikman or Carson Palmer when they came out. I don't think Bradford's quite that guy, but I think he's clearly the top quarterback in this draft. He's a gifted passer. You know, what you always have to worry about with guys who come from that system, and we've all seen this watching college football, is when they look to the sideline for all these plays, and a lot of these guys really can't read fronts, they don't read coverages, they get the play and they execute the play. And that's going to be something he's going to have to learn in the NFL. Jimmy Clawson, on the other hand, and I think Clawson has some fundamental issues throwing the ball. I don't think he's special at anything, but he knows how to point out the mic. He knows how to set protections. He knows how to do things that quarterbacks in the NFL have to do. So I think he's more advanced in that area. But, you know, one thing that really bothers me about Clawson is he kind of sits down when he throws the ball. He's got a really low release point on a lot of throws. And guys like that always worry me, because the pocket gets a lot more noisy and muddied in the NFL, and there are more bodies around you. And I always get concerned about those guys.
And he's not a 6'5 guy to be.
No. You know, it's like Drew Brees is 6 feet, but throws it like he's 6'3.
Right.
Jimmy Clawson, I forget what his exact height is. You know, I probably have it in front of me here somewhere. But, you know, he's probably what, in the six? He was 6'2.5.
Yeah.
Okay, 6'2.5 was his official height. He throws it like he's 6 feet, you know, and that's always a concern.
And do you think he's a tough evaluation for me, too, because you know he played with a bad toe all year. Do you think that was a problem, generating RPMs or with his motion? You can only go off of what you see on tape, but when you know there's an injury involved, how does that affect your analysis?
Well, that's why I watched him before the injury, and I think that some of these concerns were still present before the injury. And I think a guy's throwing, you know, it's funny, he was just on the cover of ESPN, the magazine, as if he had the perfect throwing motion, which he, by the way, does not have, but you know, I think that there's positives with him and there's a few concerns. You know, it's funny. When you mention concerns, people automatically say, oh, well, he doesn't like him. That's not the point. It's not a matter of liking him or disliking him. I think there's a lot of positives. I think there's a couple of concerns. My concerns are such that I don't view him as a top 10 pick in a draft, but that doesn't mean 3 or 4 years from now he won't be a solid NFL quarterback.
Do you think he's maxed out, you know, physically, mentally? Do you think his ceiling, he's already reached his ceiling almost?
You know, that's a fascinating question, and I know it's never in good form to argue with the host, but I don't know exactly what that means, and I say that honestly.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's a lot of quarterbacks who are semi-robotic. Like, you could argue Troy Aikman was robotic, but, you know, he was pretty damn good being robotic. You know, so I don't know exactly what maxed out means. If you can drop back, make all the throws, you know, and do all the right things, then you're a really good NFL quarterback. So, you know, I'm not exactly sure, you know, when people say that, because I've heard that about a lot of guys. You know, we tend, in this business, we tend to talk like that a lot. But again, I'm not exactly sure what that means.
I hear you. And okay, before we get too crazy and dig into everybody, I know you've watched another 10 or so of the college quarterbacks. Who stands out to you? Give me is there a big name guy or two that you think is overrated? Is there a lesser known player that you're higher on than you think most are out there?
I think there's two guys to fall into the category of guys I watched who I find intriguing, and that's the Crompton kid from Tennessee, and it's Kafka from Northwestern. By the way, I think Kafka has a better skill set than Colt McCoy, and they play in a very similar offense. He's not going to be drafted ahead of Colt McCoy. That would be my guess, although no one knows where anybody's drafted. You know, everybody's just speculating now. But the Crompton kid was very intriguing because he played, again, in a pro offense. I think his arm strength is probably not much more above average, but, you know, you saw the three-step, the five-step, the seven-step drops. You saw play action from under center. You saw designed movement. You saw the one-back sets, the two-back sets. You saw everything you're going to see in an NFL offense. And I thought that the kid showed some of the things I like to see when I evaluate a quarterback. Kafka, on the other hand, you know, again, he played in that spread stuff, so there are some things you don't see, but he threw the ball a lot better than McCoy at the intermediate to deeper levels. McCoy really struggles with that. And I just think Kafka has a chance to be an NFL quarterback. And these are two guys, obviously, more than likely will be drafted after the third round, so they're not going to come in as quote-unquote starting-type guys. But, you know, we know that that can change in the NFL, guys who've been in the league 2-3 years, and then all of a sudden they get a chance.
I would love to see if Kafka would have been at Texas and McCoy would have been at Northwestern.
There you go.
What public opinion would be on the two of them. I mean, I know McCoy's won an awful lot of games. I just don't see enough physical ability there. And one thing I've really noticed listening to you over the years is arm strength. Many think, oh, arm strength's so overrated. I couldn't disagree more. I'm very much with you on this. You have to have it.
It just drives me nuts. Now, do you have to have an absolute gun? No. But there are certain three, you know, when you're in the third and fourth quarter of tight games, okay, and it's third and 11, and you've got to make a stick throw into a tight window, you know, you got to have some arm strength, you know, and you don't make those, and believe me, this is not a knock at Tim Tebow, who I've met is a phenomenal kid, but, you know, at some point, you've got to have the physical attributes to make throws. You don't make critical throws in key situations because you're a neat guy. It just doesn't work that way in the NFL. You've got to be able to make... Here, I'll give you a perfect example, okay? How about the game-winning throw that Ben Roethlisberger made this year against the Green Bay Packers on the final play of the game? I'm sure we can all visualize that play.
Sure.
Okay. You know, that's an arm strain throw. You know, certain guys can make that throw. A lot of guys can't make that throw. You know, he threw that ball literally from one side of the field to the other on a line, so it's probably a 50-yard throw when all was said and done. You know, a guy like Colt McCoy, he couldn't make it. He wouldn't have even thought to attempt that throw.
Yeah, I love that people are saying, boy, McCoy looked good at his pro day. Well, he didn't have a 280-pound defensive lineman hanging off him, you know, trying to shrug him off with his feet not set, trying to deliver the ball outside against the elements, you know, like
you know what? That's a great point about McCoy, because one thing, and I watched about 4 or 5 games of his, he's very reactive to pressure and bodies around him. When the pocket got noisy, McCoy had a tendency to get pretty ugly. And in the NFL, there's a lot of bodies around. You know, you can't live in the NFL on bubble screens to the wide side of the field.
And Greg, we could talk about this for 100 years, and it's some of my favorite topics, and I think you're tremendous at what you do, and hopefully we can do it again. But
absolutely.
I've been Todd Vader's over there saying, boy, you guys got to wrap this up.
Okay. Anytime.
You guys know where to find me.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks.
Hey, now we have Heath Evans joining us, fullback from the Saints. Heath, how's everything going?
It is going well. Besides the rehab process, it's been a great offseason so far.
Yeah, that's the first thing I want to ask. How is the knee, and do you expect to be ready by training camp? And give us a little update on the progression there.
Yeah, training camp should be a no-brainer. You know, now I'm probably at that 90-95% mark where you're trying to get over the mental hurdles. You're trying to get over that last little bit of, oh, it doesn't quite feel just perfect. But things have gone well. It's been a tough off season. I've never had to rehab through one. So from that side, it's been a bit different. But all in all, hopefully OTAs and mini camps will be that time for me to kind of knock the dust and the rust off and get back out there with my boys.
No, that's great. And you were rehabbing with Dr. Andrews, is that correct?
That's correct. I'm down here in Pensacola Beach at the Andrews Institute, and they've got a great staff. They work you hard. Every day is a challenge, but it's been good for sure.
Cool. And the angle that's pretty interesting to me is it's come to my attention that you have worked with Sam Bradford. Is that at the Institute, or can you tell people what your relationship is there with him?
you know, it's kind of unique. It's, you know, when I got down here after the Super Bowl and he had been here for a while, obviously rehabbed his shoulder, as well as working with API, which is Athletes Performance Institute down here, who was kind of doing his football training for him. But the kid's just, he's a unique kid. You know, you expect to meet the Tebows, the Colt McCoys, these big-name college studs, and it's sad to say, but you expect a certain type of persona, and I got the exact opposite of what I expected. I saw a kid that was humble, that was hungry, that really just wanted to sit down and ask questions all day long and try to pick people's brains, that had been there and done that, to the position of where he's going. And you know what, he was a breath of fresh air for sure.
No, that sounds great. I mean, you only hear good things about him. I haven't been fortunate enough to sit down with him, but is he somebody that you would like to get in the huddle with? I mean, can you see him leading a football team, crunch time? You know, you played in an awful lot of big games, especially with your Patriot days. Can you see him being able to handle the pressure of those environments? You've been around guys like Drew Brees, Tom Brady. Does he have some similar traits to those two?
You know, he kind of does. You know, and you don't really know somebody until you get in the fire with them. But
sure.
He kind of has this quiet air of confidence about him. You know, you'd see him and you'd almost be like, man, is he vocal enough to lead? But the more you get to know him, he's just a guy that's really kind of soaking up everything around him. You know, and myself and Leon Washington have been here. I mean, he was just a guy that just he just wanted crave knowledge. And I think that's rare for today's young NFL player, especially for a guy that's projected to be one overall, a guy that's got everything that they say he needs to be successful in our league. But yet he was just constantly craving more. And that's kind of the Drew Brees, the Tommy Brady that I've been around, of guys that just can never quite get enough information. They always want something else to just make sure they've got enough to get that W.
You can certainly learn a lot more by listening than by talking. And if he has that knowledge already and understands that, he's going to go pretty far from a mental standpoint.
I would definitely think so. I mean, obviously so much comes down to the team that picks someone. I've looked at players across the league for years and say, man, I wonder if they would have gotten picked up by a Sean Payton or a Bill Belichick. What if? What would have happened? You know, I think about a Jamarcus Russell, a guy that's got all the talent in the world, but maybe has never really been taught how to study and how to prepare and really been held to expectations that I've been under with a Belichick or a Payton. You know, so I think Sam's one of those guys that he's going to find a way to succeed wherever he lands, and he's definitely a competitor for sure.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I'm sure everybody was saying the exact same things about David Carr, you know, this time right before he became the first-round pick, Jamarcus Russell. You get thrown into a pretty rough opportunity like that, and you get beat up like Carr did. I'm not sure it matters who you are. You know, it's just, it's such a physical game, and it takes its toll mentally and physically on you.
Very true. I mean, I often wonder if you put Peyton Manning or Tom Brady in different situations, would they be, you know, in Peyton's case, would he be that first-round bust, or would he have found a way to achieve the same goals and the same success that he has achieved? You know, for Brady, obviously, he started out as a sixth-round pick and had to work his way up the totem pole, but I know the coaching staff that he was under and the pressure he was under to perform and what he was given to perform every day. I mean, when you get great coaches, they make Sundays feel and seem very easy at times. So, you know, I hope Sam, I know he'll land on his feet one way or another, but, you know, I'd like to, he's one of the few guys that is his age that I wouldn't mind seeing getting the paycheck that he's probably getting ready to get handed.
No, this sounds like a heck of a start for the kid, even though he hasn't even played a snap yet or done any of those things. But let's change gears real quick. The Heath Evans Foundation, I did a little bit of homework on it, knowing you were going to be on the podcast. Can you tell everyone exactly what this is? It's really something, and I give you all the credit in the world.
Well, I appreciate it. It's really pretty simple. You know, my beautiful bride of almost 9 years was sexually abused as a little girl. And so we've taken that NFL badge and that shield and the financial wherewithal that we have by being blessed by the NFL to really kind of take on the challenge of providing the same hope and healing I was able to give my wife through counseling and just through some really just some loving care to get her the healing that she so desperately needed. In her life, it was something that had been swept under the rug for 20-plus years. And when she met me and finally realized that okay, this crazy guy loves me no matter what, he's not going anywhere, she was able to kind of drop those walls and barriers and kind of let me into her heart, and we were able to kind of usher her into the healing she so desperately craved. And so that's what we do. You know, we provide free of charge counseling and really just anything that a family may need to overcome the wounds of childhood sexual abuse, whether it's their child or they were a victim themselves when they were a child. That's what we do. So we're kind of a one-stop shop for families that have had to walk through childhood sexual abuse.
And there's a softball game on the horizon. Is that what's going on next?
There sure is. April 28th, down in New Orleans, my Saints football/softball team is going to take on a group of Armed Forces all-star softball team. So we're probably going to take a black eye and a bloody nose in the name of charity for this softball game. I'm not, you know, people have always asked me who's going to be the best player. I always tell them to be Drew Brees.
Next question.
Yeah, Drew, it's like guys like Tom Brady and Drew Brees, listen, you just don't ever want to do a pickup game of anything with them because they just have this natural knack of being great at everything they do. So I think the fun thing will probably, there's always that one athlete that is so superb on the football field, but when you get them out of their realm of influence, goodness gracious, they just look horrible. I think that will probably be Reggie Bush. I'm not sure if my boy can hit a softball. We'll see. I might be wrong, but we'll see.
You know what? It's hilarious you bring that up. Over the summer, I was invited to play in Heinz Ward's celebrity softball event, and I hadn't picked up a glove in 10 years, Heath. And I was on Ben Roethlisberger's team. They stuck me on first because I'm big and slow. He's playing short, throwing 1,000 miles an hour at me. I'm afraid trying to catch this softball. It's bouncing off my glove. You know, and just those quarterbacks just have it all. He came to play 6 times. I think he hit 5 home runs and a double. You know, he probably could hit a home run every time he was up. And then you talked about Reggie Bush. Willie Parker couldn't hit the ball at all. You know, he's fast. He's really athletic. But it's funny to me how it doesn't translate necessarily for some of the guys.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like you put a linebacker at running back or a running back at linebacker or, you know, a DB at wide receiver. Sometimes the DB to wide receiver can be pretty similar. But I'm telling you, you get guys out of their element, and I think it's fun to see superb athletes, great athletes kind of fall on their face. So Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, 2 years ago was down at my softball game in Palm Beach, and by the end of the game, Adalius Thomas was standing behind home plate just throwing the ball out in the outfield because Ben Jarvis could not connect with that ball to save his life. So, you know, it's you always have your comic relief built into the game somewhere. You just never know quite where it's going to come from.
One last thing, and you talked about running backs here, and I just need to bring it up. And when you were at Auburn, you were with Ronnie Brown, Cadillac Williams, and Brandon Jacobs, right?
They came in right after me. So that Ronnie Brown was the only one that was there. He was actually a redshirt chubby freshman my last year at Auburn.
Okay. Well, hey, you've been a tremendous interview. You brought a lot of insight to the table, and best of luck with the foundation, the softball game, the rehab, and next year with the Saints. You guys are obviously a contender and primed for another big year.
I appreciate it. Hey, one last thing. We've got a big raffle for the foundation going on right now. $2 tickets. It's one raffle, 3 prizes. The main prize is to win my custom H2 Hummer. It is a beast. It's $2. All those proceeds go to the foundation. People can go to heathevans.org and just click on the big black Hummer. We appreciate everyone's support.
Hey, thank you.
So that's going to do it for today's jam-packed edition of Football Today. Matt Williamson, good stuff there.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We had some good guests and a lot of action this week, too. A couple big trades and a lot going on, as always. But, man, Christmas is right around the corner. Draft weekend's going to be phenomenal.
And we've got a lot of draft coverage coming your way. The next episode of this particular podcast, Football Today, will be coming to you on Monday, where we'll feature picks 1 through 16 of the Superfan Super Mock Draft. By the way, there's news with the Superfan Super Mock Draft as the Bills... This is in fake land, by the way, people. Do not mistake this. This is fake news.
Yeah, this didn't go across the ticker on ESPN.
The Bills have acquired Jason Campbell for a 3rd-round draft pick. I sent it to you and said, yes, I approve of this very much.
Yeah, and if you listen to what Greg and I were talking about with Campbell, I'm a fan, and I think he deserves another shot. I think a team like Buffalo would be great. I think I'm not saying the guy's going to be a world beater, but I think he can be a serviceable starter in this league. And if I was Buffalo, I'd give up a 3rd-round pick for him for sure.
again, to be sure, that is fake news, people. The Bills did not really acquire Jason Campbell, although if they'd like to follow in the footsteps of what our super fans have done, we invite them to do that wholeheartedly. This would only obviously impact how the Bills draft in the first round, where quarterback no longer becomes that much of a need. And they could go maybe...
We're not going three rounds into the draft, and it's not like that pick
matter. No. We're only doing the first round. The first round will complete on Tuesday, where we'll go picks 17 through 32, and we'll include the Bears and the Panthers, who have no first-round draft picks on that day as well. On Wednesday, first draft with Mel and Todd will be out, and they'll have the latest draft news, react to that. If you missed their last podcast, which came out yesterday, they went straight through 1 through 32, reacting to the Brandon Marshall trade. So that's good stuff. Go download it now at the Pod Center page at ESPNradio.com. On Thursday, Matt will return with Football Today. We'll have, again, the latest draft news, whatever's going to happen here before the first round occurs. And then on Friday, Matt will recap what happened in the first round and get us ready for the draft over the weekend. And by the way, you can follow a lot of the draft stuff on ESPN Radio, as well as they'll broadcast the 2010 NFL Draft from Radio City Music Hall in New York City. Football Tonight host Freddie Coleman will anchor the coverage with ESPN.com senior NFL writer John Clayton and former Washington Redskins executive vice president of football operations Vinny Serrato. Coverage will begin Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern for round one and Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern for rounds two through three. And ESPN Radio will also be present with news and updates on Saturday for rounds four through seven. So we've got the draft covered here at ESPN Radio, ESPNRadio.com, ESPN.com. It's your one-stop shopping.
Yeah, you know, what I'll be doing is doing the cover a live situation, which is like an interactive chat, more or less. Jeremy's going to be with me, too, on Thursday, Friday, and a good portion of Saturday. Just found out he's going to be chatting along with us.
Nice.
Same with all the bloggers are going to be stopping in. I think John Clayton and those guys will all be stopping in. So you guys need to check that out, too. It'll be a lot of fun.
There you have it, folks.
The music provided on today's show is from Mevio's Music Alley, Will Chryski's Metal Mayhem. Check it out at music.mevio.com. For more football talk, be sure to check out Football Tonight, Monday through Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com.